Have you seen those sweatshirts making their way around Instagram that's like, not diagnosed, but something's off?
Hi, welcome to Hate Podcast. We talk about the ghosts of the past and love the spirit of the future. Hey, Jessica.
Hey, Hannah.
How are you?
Listen.
Well,
we've been going through it.
Yeah.
It's been trying times.
Mm-hmm. You've been toasty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Toasty.
Toasty roasty.
Down some wisdom.
Jessica's tooth fell out. Sing the other day, everybody. Part of her
tooth.
Well,
one crumbled.
Oh, my God.
And then in my attempt to, like, go to the dentist about that, my wisdom tooth was like, ha-ha, you thought. And then I had to go to the emergency dentist to have that ripped out of my face.
Yeah, and now you got to let that heal so you can get the crumbling tooth out of your face.
I'm going to have a brand new implant.
I hate that for you. But also, I feel like it's been a moment for you to face your fear.
Correct.
So, because you know that they say you got to rework your neural networks.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing the thing. So, technically, Jessica, you are doing the work, as they say. So,
the woo-woos call it shadow work.
Okay, well, okay. You keep that up. So, I'm proud of you for that.
Yeah. The dentist and I, BFFs. His hygienist can kiss my ass.
I do feel like, okay. I think I've shared this with you already, but listen, I haven't heard it. The TAs, you know, they're like the bitches of the departments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the professor's like relaxed and the TA's like, what if I'm a giant jerk to you?
Yeah.
That is the dentist and the hygienist. Like, the hygienist is, you know, bad cop. And then the dentist comes in. He's like, I'm a regular human. Look at your shiny teeth.
A bad cop for no reason.
Except one time a dentist handed me a mug for my like dental treat. And he said, this is for all the coffee you drink. And I thought that was rude.
Oh, one time I had arguably the worst dentist to ever receive a dental license as a child growing up.
Mm.
And one time he told me that if I don't floss, all of the floss will go to my heart and I will die.
The floss itself?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well.
And I was like, that can't be true.
No.
And then it turns out that he had a very severe Dr. Pepper addiction.
The soft drink?
Yes. And I was like, how is that not going to your heart?
Mm. And it's also technically kind of happening to his teeth.
Yes.
Let me tell you what. I grew up, I'm a good Southern girl. So I grew up never drinking water and only drinking sweet tea. And
the water of the South.
The water of the South. And what happened is I had 4 new cavities every 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, oh my God, I have weak teeth, everyone. And this was a part of my personality. And now as an adult, I didn't go to the dentist for a good 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Went to the dentist. He marveled at my teeth in my face. And it occurred to me that it was a sweet tea all along.
Sometimes the dental hygiene is the friends we make along the way.
I said I had the strength, the teeth of a champion, actually.
I got an A+ on my report card for really good wisdom tooth hole healing.
Oh.
Which is niche, but you appreciated.
You know what? You know, my ego just needs to be praised for every tiny thing.
I can't wait to, when we get off of this recording, to immediately force you into my own dental trauma because I kept the tooth and I need other people to see it.
You know, I actually, as a mother who actually has a bag full of baby teeth and I don't know what to do with them.
Throw them away.
I can't.
Why?
They're just...
My mother said the same thing to me. I'm like, "Why? I'm going to be 32. Why do you still have my baby teeth?"
I just feel like one day I need to have like a burial, like a ritual saying goodbye to their childhood. As a woo-woo, I think that you should understand this.
I'm not that kind of woo-woo.
Okay. You're not like...
Throw them away.
Okay. Well, one time, these people woo-woos, because you know, like when you like, you know, you give birth to your placenta after the fact. After the birth of the baby, your placenta is like, yep.
Are you one of those placenta pill people?
I did kind of want to poke it.
That's fair. That's valid.
And I think they thought I was joking because I asked where it was a few hours later so they could poke it. And they were like, oh, we already.
Yeah, it's in the biohazard bin.
I forgot they like dispersed of it or something like that, or dispensed of it or something like that. I was like, oh, but I wanted to poke it because it's like a giant muscle. But I think if I could redo it, I probably would have buried it. Would have been that kind of woo-woo. So I think I keep
saying I'm going to bury the baby. I can't even call her a woo-woo. Who
was
a woman. I think I've shared this with you. That keeps turning people's placenta into things. And I'm like, where do you keep getting the placenta?
Yeah, I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about where they get the placentas.
Mm-hmm.
And because she was talking about how nobody's buying her placenta things.
Yes.
So I was like, where'd it come from?
So stop. It's like the woman that makes jewelry out of semen.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you keep getting it from?
Yeah, who's giving that to you? Yeah. Honestly, I'm worried about him. Is he fine? Is he locked in the basement?
Does he know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. I was like, is he, like, in a basement somewhere? Giving you his semen.
Yeah.
I went to a different place.
Are you, like, robbing the sperm bank? Like, what's the...
It feels like a sperm bank hold up for her semen jewelry. The body flow. Jessica, what are we talking about today?
All right. We went on a journey last week. Mm. You do recall.
I do.
Very, very early U.S. I have a bone to pick, actually.
Oh, okay. I'm ready.
In doing this research, the number of sources that I came across that are just broadly putting some of these things from last week's episode as America, as if that is a specific thing.
Okay. Yes. I actually understand this bone you have to pick because you picked it with me.
Well,
I believe.
That's not done being picked.
Are you talking about the North America issue?
Yeah.
Well, you know, there is one America, Jessica. It is us.
Okay. Well, South America's got something to reckon with. Central America? Fucked.
Well, they're so tiny.
Okay. I mean, like, not really, though.
Anyway, I apologized for that. Corrected it in my Instagram caption.
Oh, it was not a dig at you. All of these sources
I was joking.
Just, like, put, like, a... Like, America's just, like, this shapeless enigma.
Okay, never mind. I thought you were talking about the thing where I always say America and not North America.
Oh, no. I mean, like, we need to be specific about the U.S. and not just America at large.
Oh, so okay, it's actually the same thing that I do. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, stop it.
Be better, Hannah. I'm like, damn it.
Quick recap for last week, because it's been a minute.
Mm-hmm. It's been a whole week.
I was in a whole new city for that time.
Oh, yeah, you were.
I wasn't even the place we were talking about.
You've been abroad.
Uh-huh.
Sort of.
Kind of. I'm in America.
I mean, you've been abroad about America.
So, in our first episode of Black Ivy, we talked about the evolution of the fashion of the enslaved.
Yes.
And hopefully, I have put up enough examples on the gram that some of the language is making a little more sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because the livery and the ditto drama back and forth, like, what's the difference? Turns out it's the buttons.
Oh, well, who even knew? The buttons.
Now we know.
They're the key all along.
We also read, arguably, the longest ad.
That actually was... was a journey. Like, I mean,
hashtag always low prices, always Walmart. And then we also looked a little bit at how often slave cloth was given out, who received it, how it could be processed, and then the introduction of a few other types of fabrics that became available as the antebellum was about to crumble.
Mm, okay.
Which brings us to the war.
The war. The only war.
If you didn't know, it's the War of Northern Aggression.
Indeed.
The lost cause, some could say.
The great injustice of America.
There has been no other war. No conflicts. Peace after this war. And this is really where, I think, some of the fundamentals of Black Ivy start.
Okay.
So we noted last week, slave cloth made available on plantations in a variety of different forms. Mm-hmm. Either sometimes you got provided the clothes already made. Sometimes you just got the cloth and you had to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it was a little bit of both. Sometimes you had access to different kinds of patterns. And then we got in briefly into fugitive slave ads.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, like... to search them in newspapers or like chronicling America, you have to be so specific.
Oh.
Because the language is starting to change. Now it's not a fugitive slave. They're considered freedom seekers.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
But you can't search that in an old newspaper. So like you have to use those like outdated, disgusting terms.
Oh, okay.
To be able to find what you're looking for.
So like modern day terms is these are freedom seekers.
Yeah.
But you've got to search by like runaway slave.
Yeah.
In the old, if you're fugitive. Looking in archives.
Yeah. It's a tricky one.
That is.
It's like, I feel really uncomfortable sometimes having to search, like, Negro.
Mm-hmm.
But also sometimes I don't spell it right, and you have to put the E at the end.
Mm.
It's real. It's real. My FBI agent is probably like, what the hell is happening?
Yeah. Real historian over here.
Yeah. It was noted in some of those ads, at least the ones that I found, that freedom seekers often wore like very colorful fabrics
mm-hmm.
because of a couple of reasons. Some sources say that this happens because they're trying to blend into, like, urban slavery, which people are wearing these, like, very colorful. Mm-hmm. Some are doing it because it's, like, the most expensive item that they own. And it's, like, their most precious and the only connection they have to family.
Yeah. So it's like, a valuable item.
Yeah.
So they're wearing it.
And then there's also the risk of, like, if they put the slave cloth back on, they're at risk for capture because they're sticking out.
Yeah. Because it's an identifiable thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
A handful of the slave narratives from the 30s. Mm-hmm. I need to, please don't read them as they are. Anybody listening to this, because most of those interviewers were white people.
Mm.
Of course, they're not going to tell the truth.
Mm, indeed. I mean, we're talking about the 1830s.
No, the Depression era slave narratives. Works Progress Administration slave narrative? Nope. Blank stare?
No. No. If I don't know it, our listeners probably don't know
That's
it either.
That's not true. Can't underscore that enough.
I dare one listener.
These very famous WPA slave narratives.
Okay. I dare one person to say they know what this is. Can't be Jessica.
Okay. High level.
Can't be your history friends listening either.
Quick recap. As part of the New Deal, the WPA goes into the South with many white interviewers to interview formerly enslaved people about their experience on the plantation.
Okay.
Most of them are never going to tell a white person the truth. It's a lot of, like, everything was great, and my person that owned me was very nice to me, and...
Okay.
Some of them, though, talk about, like, everyday life. So sometimes an owner... or an enslaver would give them, like, a special fabric for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
It could be hand-me-downs from the woman in the big house.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes it's specially purchased and available in the local Walmart.
Okay. The store. The commissary, so to speak.
There are some sources detailing, quote, the dandies.
Oh, okay. Who, what?
Who are, they're free black people that have, like, some degree of more than zero in wealth.
Okay.
And they can be a little more shishy with their clothing.
A little more dandy, shall we say?
We should say that. But this is why I bring, and I'm going to use it as an example on Instagram of, like, I think I talked about this last week about Django Unchained.
Mm-hmm.
Where he goes into the shop and the guy's like.
He goes in the shop and the.
You can pick anything you want. And he comes out like a dandy.
Mm.
He's in, like, he tries on, like, a yellow one and a pink one, and he comes out in this, like, really terrible blue thing.
So he's like, I'm trying things.
Yeah. And some sunglasses, which I think is interesting. An interesting choice.
You know, sometimes we just make choices.
Yeah.
Trying things out. It's a fashion.
Mm-hmm. But these kind of, like, quote-unquote fancier fabrics are, like, an out loud exclamation for these free black people of their reclamation of their own identity.
Okay.
So they're picking, like, very... out loud
yeah.
kinds of fabrics.
So they're picking very vibrant
yeah.
colors and fabrics. Mm-hmm. And
clothing could also be freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're in a position as someone enslaved with skills in certain trades, you could hire yourself out.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times that's like being a blacksmith or a cobbler or like a seamstress. Or
yeah.
somebody
some sort of like particular specialized skill.
Yeah. So I pulled an interesting example and I might... the future do an episode on her.
Ooh, okay.
She seems like a tricky trick.
Okay. Okay, who is this?
This is Elizabeth Keckley.
Mm-hmm.
An icon of needlework. A living, well, was a living legend.
As many legends once were living.
She hired her skills as a seamstress out to make enough money to buy her own freedom.
Okay, good. We love her.
She was so good at it, she opened her own shop.
Okay.
So now she's a business owner and a free lady.
Mm, so the most free.
And she gets, I don't know, contracted, commissioned by Mary Todd Lincoln, former first lady.
Oh.
Famous ghost seer.
What?
Mm-hmm.
She saw ghosts?
Yeah.
Oh.
Plagued by ghosts.
Oh. I mean.
Mental health is a real thing.
Yeah. Know? I don't know if she was well after seeing her husband murdered.
Not sitting directly next to him. And then she, like, lost a couple kids in a very dramatic way.
Yeah, well, she, like, I mean, she had been splattered with the blood and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard.
That doesn't go away. It doesn't come out of your clothes on a washboard.
No, what's going to haunt you after that is a ghost.
There's no dawn for that.
No, just going to. probably be so grim tonight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? She went through things.
That's true. Yeah. And hired a kick-ass dressmaker.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And she was her dressmaker for her entirety of the time in the White House. She's also a published author.
Oh, what did she write about?
In 1868. And you know how specific the titles are.
Oh, God. I'm ready.
Lost opportunity to call it Behind the Seams.
Devastated.
Behind the Scenes. Or 30 Years as a Slave and 4 Years in the White House. About her experience from enslavement to freedom and then being able to support herself.
I am disappointed Behind the Scenes was not selected. But I do understand immediately by that title what this book's going to be about.
Yep.
Immediately. Did you read any part of this book?
I'm having a hard time finding a copy of it.
Shocking.
I thought it would be in the Internet Archive.
I'm so sorry. Shocking.
Okay. Well, one of us didn't know what the slave narrative was, so I'm accepting that nonsense.
I need somebody. I need a listener to stick up for me on that.
The same way that slave cloth is like its own industry within this like grand scheme of enslavement.
Mm-hmm.
Other industries, like within fashion, could also buy freedom.
Mm-hmm.
So briefly, we have to take you back.
Okay.
To our old friend Natchez.
Natchez.
We're going way.
Like how back? Like to the 1600s?
No, like the enslavement era.
They were enslaved people in the 1600s.
Natchez. Come on now.
How far back are we going? I just threw a decade out.
Might be an episode. Who's to say?
Okay.
About William Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
He is known as the Barber of Natchez.
I just have the urge to call him Willie Johnson.
Fair. he is born enslaved, and he's freed at the age of 11.
Oh, okay.
Because of, like, some very Natchez-specific laws about freedom and enslavement. And I think the Catholic Church might have been involved. Don't quote me.
I think Natchez is a very specific place, so
yes.
This makes sense to me that something strange would happen.
Yeah, but he apprenticed for a lot of years under a local barber,
mm-hmm.
and then he bought a barber shop in 1830 for $300.
Nice.
And then he also taught other people the art of barbering, thus becoming the Barber of Natchez.
That makes sense to me.
He's known for being impeccably dressed, and every picture I've ever seen of him, he is to the nines.
You know what? This is how a barber should be.
Yeah. I either want the grungiest human being I've ever seen or an impeccably dressed man.
Yeah. I think, but no matter what, you've got to have a vibe.
Yes.
Like a style.
Mm-hmm.
So either way, there's like a moment happening.
Yeah. There's some drama.
Oh, obviously, yes.
Because he is also an enslaver.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah.
Willie, come on.
But, okay, I'm going to defend him.
Okay.
Just this once.
Just.
With my own opinion.
Okay.
Most of the people he enslaved, he was related to. So I think it was his way of, like, he's not making enough money that he can buy their freedom, but he can enslave them and keep them from being separated and sold away.
Okay. Okay. I think this is valid.
There is some drama.
Okay. The drama?
Yeah.
Whoa.
It's Natchez.
Yeah.
There's always drama at the top of the hill.
It's an extremely dramatic place.
God forbid you go to the bottom of the hill.
Why can't you just be fucking regular?
Don't go under the hill. he is an enslaver.
Oh. Willie.
Which gives him, like a type of disgrace.
I mean, it's a problem.
But also, like, a type of status in the community.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's right, but he did enslave 16 people.
Oh, that's so many people.
Well, a lot of people would say it's not enough people if you live in Natchez.
That's fair. For Natchez.
But in his own defense, and there's a little bit of this in the, his home is a national park site.
Oh, okay.
There's a little, it's not overrun with interpretation, but there's a little bit about, like, what his motivations might have been.
Okay.
And I am to agree that because he wasn't making enough money to buy the freedom of the people enslaved, they were likely related to him, and that was his way of keeping them in Natchez.
Oh, okay. So not being, like, separated.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. That's valid. And, you know, like,
I'm not saying it's right, but it happened.
No, but also, I mean, like, you're forced into, like, a really difficult position. There's no good decision to make.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, that situation where there's, yeah. If you can't buy the freedom of 16 people.
Yeah. You do what you can with what you got.
Yeah. You sometimes have to make, sometimes there's not a right decision.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's very difficult. Okay. Well, I have some grace for Willie about that.
Yeah.
If that is true.
He.
We'll find out when you know what? Somebody has Jesus one day.
Yep.
About Willie's motivations. We might see Willie there. We don't know. You know, that used to be my answer. This is going to be beside the point, but like all my questions that I can't find the answer out, I'm like, somebody asked Jesus one day. What's the answer to that?
Google's free, but that's cool.
Gonna be. We can't definitively say. I'm like, she's looking at that man's heart. What's up? And then I'll trot on down to hell while I walk.
But just, it's like your one quiz at the gates.
Do me a favor. What if I only get one question and I've built up so many questions? What am I going to ask? What am I going to be like? I don't know. Am I asked about Willie Johnson or am I going to ask if Paul and Barabbas made up? I don't know. No, it's not Barabbas. It's Barnabas.
Well, it's not going to be that question. You're out.
What if I asked about Barabbas and Jesus was like, they never met?
You obviously haven't read my text, my child. You got to go.
He's going to be like, no. You forgot a very important thing. Carry on. <I'm> sorry. Anyway, I'm going to ask Jesus about that one day.
Okay.
Anyway, so how did Willie do?
Well, you know, there's a, like, you can read his diaries.
Oh.
They're, like, very widely published.
Oh.
They get republished every few years.
Yeah, there's just some, like, diaries about, you know? A lot of people are writing their lives down.
A lot of it, you could flip through it. But there is enough evidence to suggest that, like, maybe enslaving his own family is, like, the nicest thing he did.
Oh.
So.
He wasn't a great...
You know, like, I wouldn't put him in my top 10.
Okay. So, bit of an asshole Willie was.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, sometimes people be that way. Mm-hmm. When they've been through things, like enslavement. So.
Yeah.
Understandable.
Quickly, though. King Cotton has, like, taken over the world.
The industry.
We don't need our wools. We need our cottons.
Mm-hmm. The mill is about.
Mm-hmm. No more linen for us.
The gin is happening.
Yes.
Cotton gin.
Cotton gin. Other gins.
Other gin, maybe. Mm-hmm. That fucked me up last week, though, so I'm not returning for a bit.
That's because Hannah poured with her heart.
My heart decided what I needed.
And she had to grapple with being an adult the next day.
And it was really rough. But anyway, the cotton gin, though, as opposed to the one that fucks Hannah up.
Correct.
Is the one we're talking about.
Yes. It is the cause of most of the problems.
Yes.
Because of the growth of enslavement, mm-hmm. which causes, I don't know if you know, a war.
The war, one could say.
Yes. Of northern aggression.
Obviously,
yes. It was unprovoked.
The South was doing nothing wrong.
There were no articles of secession that said over the institution of slavery. Mississippi didn't do that at all.
You know what? I still claim, I mean, you know what the South was doing? Sending all their enslaved people back to Africa, for sure.
Never brought them at all. They disappeared one day.
No,
they
were like, reason.
We're here to do work.
Mm-hmm. They were like, we were getting too rich and worth mad about it.
Yes. But this does kind of eliminate slave cloth and then cotton kind of.
Oh, okay. So cotton steps in.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there are like a handful of kind of like basic patterns. Gingham is really popular.
Mm.
It's just like, well, it's quick fun. And easy.
Yeah. It's so cute.
I too would buy a fun fabric for the people I'm enslaving.
Oh. Okay. I was just thinking it's a general fashion statement.
Just
like an apron.
God, I hope that never becomes a soundbite.
I'm so sorry. I don't know why I went to like Lucille Ball in the kitchen.
It's like kind of like a gingham pattern we'd recognize, but also is like
different. Okay, so I guess I thought gingham universally. So gingham originally was specifically a slave cloth pattern?
No, but it was okay. Like close to what we know it as, but it's a little like skinnier.
Okay. I'm assuming you have examples for the gram.
Yes.
Obviously, yes.
They are up. It's, let's see. It will be the last post for this this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I've patchworked them all together.
Like a quilt.
Yes.
Fine.
Also, very famous on a plantation to use your leftover scraps.
Mm-hmm.
Quilts.
Yes, indeed.
The war is fought.
Mm-hmm.
The war is won.
Indeed.
The South isn't going to rise again.
No.
I need us to be real clear about that.
No. South is just doing our thing.
Yeah. Emancipation doesn't change. Well, let me back up. Okay. There are more options in quote unquote fashion for men than there are for women.
Oh.
In the gray area of like the end of the Civil War and emancipation.
Mm-hmm.
Because they could enlist in the colored army.
Oh, okay.
So you're immediately given a uniform.
Yeah.
So you've got something else to wear.
Yeah. But the women haven't, they don't have any options with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Stuck with what they got. As we get into emancipation, as it comes to fabric, there's like, quote, nicer fabrics, but they're exclusively reserved for white people.
Mm-hmm.
White women specifically.
Yeah.
And then black men's fashion was made like slightly better material. Kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Francis Freeze and his jeans. The maker of pants.
Mm, the maker of pants. Mm-hmm. Which episode was that?
The last one.
Okay. Black Ivy one, shall you say? Okay.
One of two.
I'm so sorry.
But that like heavy duty material is like much more, it leans heavier towards men than it does.
Yeah. Women. Like the OG denim.
Yeah.
Okay. But I could see why a skirt in that material would be difficult.
Yeah. White women with emancipation and a little bit before get this like immediate title of femininity with the introduction of the hoop skirt.
Mm, indeed.
And very bright colors.
I do remember this from the Shirley Temple movies, which are all horribly racist about this era, so don't watch those.
Do not recommend.
No, 0 out of 10, looking back. Mm-hmm. Don't do it. But anyway, that's my original hoop skirt influence. But don't do it.
No. Don't be like that girl that won the only season with the only black bachelor.
Oh.
Who was like, I used to have plantation parties, and he was like, I can fix her.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that.
And then went back to her. That was a mistake.
Yeah. I think I'm kind of getting the vibe they broke up.
Did they?
I think. She's not on his gram anymore.
Well, one can only hope
I mean, it was very obvious to most of the world that he really just wanted to sleep with his mom, so.
That was rough.
Yeah.
That was a rough thing to watch, honestly. Mm-hmm. Awkward. So, I hope that, mostly for him, but also maybe a little for her and the mother situation.
Yes.
So, mm-hmm. I understand.
Hoop skirts.
Oh, yeah. We went off on a tangent there.
I think it's interesting as a brief detour.
Okay. Another one.
You know, there's always, like, the thing that comes right before.
Uh-huh.
Where Edwardian fashion, right before hoop skirts, it's fairly, like, slim, buttoned up. You gotta, like,
oh, yeah. In. Was that the bustle era?
Yes.
Yes. Gilded Age.
Mm-hmm.
No, wait. That was after.
Yeah.
That was my bad.
But it's, like, it cycles. So you see.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you cycle so the little bustle with the tight skirt.
I think it's interesting. A hoop skirt is, like, a visual cue on a plantation of, like, I am taking up space. Mm-hmm. I am the woman of this plantation.
Yeah.
This is my big house.
Yes. And my big skirt in my big house.
Yes. Which someone else had to dress me in, mm-hmm. and I enslaved them.
Yeah, because I'm unable to dress myself in this impractical skirt.
Yes, because the button's in the back.
Just, like, I can't reach anything. It's just my, like, skinny little leg down here.
Interestingly, there's significant enough for me evidence that when Union soldiers, particularly, like, Sherman's March to the Sea,
uh-huh.
would steal the dresses.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And parade around in them to mock the Confederacy. But they would, like, steal things out of these plantation homes where people were fleeing. Would never be like, put this on. This hoop skirt over your wool uniform.
Just, that's actually so funny.
I think that's a good use of boys will be boys.
That's maybe the one incident. Oh, I'm going to say a stamp of approval. That's hilarious. It's also a way to say these, like, women fled in the night, didn't have time to put on their hoop skirts.
Yeah. I'm imagining, like, Vicksburg, right? Like, people would flee the plantations in Vicksburg and they lived in caves. And I'm like, you're in a hoop skirt, but this guy's also in your hoop skirt. On your plantation, he's burning to the ground.
Oh, just in hoop skirts around here.
Like, but that's Union so soldiers would take, like, you know, as these people are trying to flee capture,
mm-hmm. they would
go in and pillage these plantations.
Yeah.
They'd take things. Like, there's a ruby necklace on display at the Museum of Mississippi History.
Mm-hmm.
Union soldiers stole it, and then eventually it was returned.
Oh, to the South.
So the family, they definitely bought. They're definitely blood rubies.
So what you're telling me is that art museums could just hang on to their Native American artifacts, but the necklace of some Southern enslaving family was returned
back. Yeah. Out of
is that what
white guilt?
Is that what you're telling me? Okay.
Yep. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
But
anyway, you are merely the bearer of the story.
I am. And in typical form, women in STEM. Not all women, but many of them.
Many women.
Invented pockets. But what they would do is they would create, like, a like a belt, mm-hmm. and then be two pockets.
Oh my god, I've read about. I didn't read about this. I watched it on TikTok. And they continue your story.
It goes under their skirt, mm-hmm. so that if you're just like walking through the streets of whatever's been pillaged and that you get searched, like your valuables can still be hidden because mm-hmm. like no respectable man's going to like shove his hand up your dress.
Surely not.
I mean, he's going to wear it later, but he won't just hand up it.
Hopefully not. That's actually another problem. But yes. So original pockets were little belty things under mm-hmm. the skirts, not built into the skirts.
Which again, I'm like, how do you? I guess you're not trying to like quickly access the things in your secret pockets.
Yeah, I think you're just sneaking them around.
Yeah.
You don't have to. It's not your wallet's not in there.
Your rubies must be hidden when you go mm-hmm. to the caves.
But say you've got a shilling. The famous old South money. It can be in your regular purse.
Gold bars.
It can be in your regular purse so that you can buy your goods and services.
And this is actually like, I don't know that anybody would argue that General Sherman was like good at it.
No. Name it, and he wasn't great at it.
No. Particularly, he was like, I'm going to march to the sea, and I'm going to free all these people, but he had no plan for them once he freed them.
No. There was nothing to do. So they just
followed him.
He was also like, what if I just burn shit?
Yeah.
And like, and leave nothing for these people. You know who could have lived in that big house? A whole bunch of formerly enslaved people.
Yes. So the refugees in Union camps kind of become like the in-between symbol of like what's available to the enslaved and what's available to free people.
Uh-huh.
I thought this really interesting article called Clothing Bodies by mm-hmm. Amy Merle. I hope I'm saying that right. Amy Merle Taylor. Mm-hmm. That Union soldiers gave them, quote, filthy rags.
Mm.
But it was like a representation of freedom.
Mm.
That they okay. could have them at all.
Okay.
But those rags also immediately work against black women.
Yeah.
Like men can, like I said, join the Union Army. Don't let the people on the internet fool you. There were no black troops in the Confederacy. That was a crime.
It was. Don't let the hot takes get you.
Yes. Women could still have a little more variance in the patterns and colors. Mm-hmm. Because they could, like, trade them out or swap them or, like, mm-hmm. whatever they could pick up along the way.
Yeah.
Like, there's some...
And women are, like, going to be resourceful.
Yeah.
About, I don't know, having, like, not just having dignity, but, like, being creative and, mm-hmm. and finding their way. So.
And some camps had, I'm going to use store loosely, that allowed women some autonomy to buy fabric. Mm-hmm. So now they also have like buying power they didn't previously have.
Yeah.
So they're still like, they're forced to find a freedom in their own way.
Yeah.
That's not equal to men.
Mm-mm.
No. Won't be. Refugee camps though had stores. They're in the North. So if you're a refugee in the South.
Yeah.
You're still fucked.
Mm-hmm. Sherman.
Yeah.
And the foresight.
The fabric that's available in these stores is usually donated by white women. So even then, you're at the mercy of, like, what are they willing to donate?
Yeah. Yeah. So you're really not, you're still not given a lot of choices.
Yeah. This is also not the start of, but I would say kind of height of head wraps becoming much more visible.
Mm, okay, yeah.
Just kind of out and about mm-hmm. in the world. Because it gave some autonomy that was lacking in clothing options, and then it holds just a little bit of tradition from
mm-hmm.
where they were stolen from.
Yeah, so it was like a way to hold on to like some culture.
Yeah. And it stays kind of like that until the end of Reconstruction, where everything goes exactly backwards, and now we have Jim Crow.
Yeah. A little sippy sip.
A little sippy sip of my southern water.
Watch them cavities.
I didn't have any. Just bust a tea.
Actually, you're like, I didn't have any cavities. My teeth just cracked in half.
Yeah, when my teeth are done, they fall out. The Gilded Age. We know her. We love her. Kind of.
The show, specifically.
Yes, the show, great. Except for that six episodes we had to watch that debutante ball happen.
You took that as a direct personal attack.
I did, because what are we? We got 43 minutes of show, and like four of them ended up being about the debutante ball, but we had to watch it for six previous episodes get planned.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
I mean, I understand. I don't hold... I didn't take it personally.
I did.
But, Jessica, brings it. You can't. Yeah. Jessica can't talk about the good old days without mentioning this.
I will.
I support you. I support you.
Step it up.
You die on your hill.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
what about the good old age?
Industrialization is upon us.
Okay, so we're not talking about show anymore.
Nope.
We're talking about the actual Gilded Age now. The historic Gilded Age, folks.
Yes. You know the one.
But it can be watched in slightly by the great HBO show. So if anyone wants to discuss that with me and Jessica, we'd love that.
Slide the DM. New season hopefully coming soon that doesn't include a debut double.
Okay, well, I hope that for you. Anyway, the actual Gilded Age, what happens?
Okay, we're industrializing.
Yes.
Which is also a point of contention in the Civil War because the South isn't doing it fast enough.
Well.
But the rest of the world is. And that's a South problem.
I mean, that is, the South does its own thing at its own pace.
They also tried to get France to recognize them as an independent nation. And even France was like, okay.
France is like, can't be doing that for y'all.
No.
No.
Industrialization starts.
That's actually a big ask. Because France sort of fought for America when America happened, so. Quite a thing to go back and be like, what if you help us split up?
Yeah. Will you do it again?
For instance, like, we already did this once.
I didn't ask for the sequel. Like,
it's not even been 100 years yet, so. No. I'm falling apart over there. I'm sorry.
You got to be doing it real wrong for France to be like, no, no.
France, like, can't go on the journey with you.
Best of luck, my friend.
That's correct.
Best of luck, mon ami. And that's all the French are.
It's the French you got. What were we saying? What were you saying?
Industrialization.
Okay, industrial for the fourth time. I'm going to not interrupt this time.
Starts supply and demand.
What?
Supply and demand.
Oh, I thought you said starts to blind demand.
Well, maybe. Who's to say? The working conditions in factories are not great.
I for sure blinded somebody.
Yes. Supply and demand with industrialization is not like brand new. It doesn't just pop up overnight.
Yeah, yeah.
But it has an impact on all industries.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time that you can get ready to wear fashion.
Oh.
Instead of going to buy the pattern, the fabric, and doing it yourself. You mm-hmm. can buy it off the rack now.
Yeah. Oh, whoa. Instead of like hiring a seamstress if you're rich. Yeah. Or like getting your enslaved seamstress to like make shit for you. So you just go into a store, buy it off the rack.
Mm-hmm.
Wear it home.
Yep.
Whoa.
And this means that people are starting to look alike.
Oh.
Because they're buying from the same stores.
Oh, no. So you're saying the black women and the white women
could look alike. I know.
Unacceptable.
It also, like, you can see, like, what the trends are more mm-hmm. readily because they're all everywhere.
Okay. So it's not like the wealthy women have access to, like, the latest fashion. It's kind of like everybody's kind of
yes.
becoming. Okay.
It's also.
There's, like, an access shift as well, then.
Mm-hmm. Because of this. Women's fashion specifically it looks a little bit like men's fashion.
Hmm.
And clothing is going to be like a very prominent part of a very prominent U.S. labor case.
Hmm.
Do you know it?
Jessica. No.
The triangle shirtwaist factory.
Oh, thing? Yes, yes. I do. Jessica. Actually, no, I do know that one. Explain it though, in case listeners don't.
Okay. Highlight reel.
Mm-hmm.
There is a factory.
Factory.
It makes shirtwaists.
Shirtwaists.
Which is just a predecessor to a bodysuit. That's all it is. And it's frilly at the top.
Mm-hmm. At the top.
The Triangle Company exclusively hires Eastern European immigrants
mm-hmm.
and locks them in the building
mm-hmm.
in a warehouse full of flammable items. Mm-hmm. And also you can smoke.
Mm.
And then, interestingly, when you put a lit cigarette on cheap-ass fabric...
It burns really quickly.
It goes ablaze.
Yeah.
And they
spreads about.
All tried to take the elevator at the same time, or they got locked in the stairways. And most of them, if not all of them, died in the Viangle Fertrace factory fire.
Mm-hmm. Because they've been locked in the building.
Because they couldn't. Yep.
Yep. Anyway, that's what happened.
Yep.
And then I believe some things shifted after that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So, like some, like, safety standards were put in place.
Yes.
Also, the beginning of some safety, workplace safety.
Pretty close to the time period of my favorite historic photograph. Are you familiar with the photographer Ouija?
No, Jessica. Actually, I really am not. So,
okay. Really, it's not like the board. It's W-E-E-G-E, Ouija. And he gets a name because he just like pops, like he'll be at a crime scene before the police find it.
Like, so he's like, so that's a nickname.
Yeah. He's got a real, well, an alias, one could
argue. I mean, honestly, thank God his mother didn't name him that.
Yeah.
So his name is Ouija. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he takes a picture in New York, I think it's New York, of a burning building.
Oh.
But there's a billboard at the top for Oscar Mayer hot dogs, and it says, just add water.
Oh, no.
You can see, like, the fire truck pouring water into the building. It's the shit post we deserve, actually.
Honestly, thank Ouija for that. It's so funny. Are you going to post that?
Yes.
It's hilarious.
It is.
It's like an OG meme.
Yeah.
Nothing new under the sun, Jessica.
No. So the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory is on fire.
Uh-huh.
And we get some labor laws.
Yes.
And some Ouija.
Some Ouija.
And at the same time, higher education is having a moment.
Mm.
For men.
Obviously. Yeah. Only for men.
Most of these men are from families who can afford higher education,
mm-hmm.
which means they're either they found some boots, pulled their bootstraps, or they're white.
Indeed.
Meaning that they're wealthy enough. They're not going to just any college.
No.
They're going to the Ivy League.
Oh, okay.
Which also significantly will influence modern of the time fashion.
Oh, the Ivy League schools do?
Ivy fashion.
Ivy fashion.
Suits. Fashion. Lots of suits. Lots of, like, very, very tailored, very buttoned up, like, stiff.
Hmm.
Like, you probably maybe walk around campus and are in a frat.
Okay.
Maybe you play rugby.
So, you're telling me that the vibe of the Ivy League fashion has not changed?
Yeah.
Okay.
We could argue it that Ivy League style, as it was then, we know now as old money wealth.
Mm-hmm. Okay, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. You're speaking the language I understand.
Yes. And they're typically personally tailored because God forbid you buy off the rack and go to an Ivy League school.
See where the off the rack slander has come from.
Right around this time, we also have the Gibson girl.
Okay.
And her adventures.
Oh.
Because, you know, the Gibson girl is very buttoned up, but she knows how to roller skate.
Okay.
And could ride a bike.
It's giving pick me.
She's also white.
Shocking.
She is, 'tis but a sketch. But obviously is skinny and blonde and it would fit right into Hollywood.
Indeed.
Yes. This gives us a very white standard of beauty.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has to live up to. But we also see how black women are, like, being very over-sexualized or mammified in this exact same moment. But are still expected to uphold this white standard of beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And black men are turned into, quote, brutes.
Mm-hmm.
They're caricatures. They're the danger.
So we start seeing, like, black caricature happening.
Yeah. These have obviously very serious implications, particularly as you get into the 20s and mm-hmm. having to upload this standard of beauty. The 20s, roaring as they are, changes like the entire landscape of fashion for everybody. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We know the flapper girl. We love her, ankles, yes. her bobs.
Mm-hmm.
We know all the arguments around that.
Indeed.
I sort of feel like maybe if Gatsby didn't just target Lock on Daisy, none of that would have happened, personally.
Could be. I couldn't say, because I've never read the book.
Well, God forbid you watch the movie.
I mean, well.
But I have for you a little bit of a lengthy quote.
Okay. I'm going to settle back. From where?
My most favorite book.
Oh.
No pressure.
Oh. My God. Oh, my God, Jessica. I only feel pressure. What is it?
Autobiography of Malcolm X.
Okay. I was like, all of a sudden, I had never heard of a book in my life. I was like, what are books? What are books? Panic. What are the autobiography of Malcolm X?
All right.
I'm looking in his picture right now on your wall.
Now, for those who have not read it and do not know, two things are important here.
Okay.
Malcolm X is a ginger.
Yes.
more people need to see the color photos of Malcolm X.
Yeah, they're really not out there a lot.
No. Also, this is his Detroit Red era. Why did they call him that? Because he lived in Detroit and he had red hair.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's not deeper than that.
No other symbolism.
The quote I'm going to give you is right after he moves to New York.
Okay.
He hooks up with a guy named Shorty.
Who's short?
I don't know. I don't think they ever like fully described like...
I'm assuming he's short Shorty. Yeah. That's all I got.
All right, here we go. Shorty soon decided that my hair was finally long enough to be conked. He had promised to school me in how to beat the barbershop's $3 and $4 price by making up congaline and then conking ourselves. I took the little list of ingredients he had printed out for me, went to the grocery store, where I got a can of Red Devil Eye, 2 eggs, 2 medium-sized white potatoes.
Oh my God.
Then at the drugstore near the pool room, as all good drugstores are.
I mean, obviously.
I asked for a large jar of Vaseline, a large bar of soap, and a large tooth comb, and a fine tooth comb, one of those rubber hoses with the metal spray head, a rubber apron, and a pair of gloves.
I can't tell if he's doing a murder or doing hair.
Going to lay on that first conk, the drugstore man asked me. I proudly told him, grinning, right. Shorty paid $6 a week for a room in his cousin's shabby apartment. His cousin wasn't at home. Quote, it's like the pad's mine. He spends so much time with his woman, Shorty said. Now, you watch me. He peeled the potatoes and thin sliced them into a quarter-sized mason fruit jar, then started stirring them with a wooden spoon as he gradually poured in a little over half the can of lye. Never use a metal spoon. The lye will turn it black, he told me. God forbid you mess up a spoon.
But he's going to put this on his head?
A jelly-like, starchy-looking glop resulted from the lye and potatoes, and Shorty broke in the 2 eggs, stirring real fast. His own conch and dark face bent down close. The congaline turned pale yellowish. Feel the jar, Shorty said. I cupped my hand against the outside and snatched it away. Damn right it's hot. That's the lie. I can't underscore enough. Don't do this. He said, So, you know, it's going to burn when I comb it in. It burns bad, but the longer you can stand it, the straighter the hair.
Oh, my God.
He made me sit down and he tied the string of the new rubber apron tightly around my neck and combed up my bush of hair. Then, from the big Vaseline jar, he took a handful and massaged it hard all through my hair and into the scalp. He also thickly Vaselined my neck, ears, and forehead.
To keep it from burning. Okay.
When I get to washing out your head, be sure to tell me anywhere you feel any little stinging, Shorty warned me, washing his hands, then pulling on the rubber gloves and tying on his own rubber apron. So many precautions to do this.
I cannot stress enough not to take hair care tips from Malcolm X.
Correct. You always got to remember that any congaline left in burns a sore in your head. The congaline just felt warm when Shorty started combing it in. But then my head caught fire. I gritted my teeth and tried to pull the sides of the kitchen table together. The comb felt as if it was raking my skin off. My eyes watered. My nose was running. I couldn't stand it any longer. I bolted to the wash basin. I was cursing Shorty with every name I could think of when he got the spray going and started soap lathering my head. He lathered and spray rinsed, lathered and spray rinsed, maybe 10 or 12 times. Each time gradually closing the hot water faucet until the rinse was cold. And that helped some. You feel any singing spots? No, I managed to say. My knees were trembling. I'll sit back down then. I think we got it all out okay. The flame came back as Shorty, with a thick towel, started drying my head, rubbing hard.
Oh, my God.
Easy, man, easy, I kept shouting. The first time's always the worst. It's good advice, actually. I mean,
it applies in so many contexts.
You get used to it the better before long. You took it real good, homeboy. You got a good conk. When Shorty let me stand up and see in the mirror, my hung head down in a limp, damp strings. My scalp still flamed, but not as badly. I could bear it. He draped the towel around my shoulders, over my rubber apron, and began again Vaselining my hair. I could feel him combing straight back, first the big comb, then the fine tooth one. Then he was using a razor very delicately on the back of my neck. Then, finally, shaping the sideburns. My first view in the mirror blotted out the hurting. I'd seen some pretty conks, but it was the first time on your own head. The transformation after a lifetime of kinks is staggering. The mirror reflected Shorty behind me. We were both grinning and sweating, and on top of my head was this thick, smooth sheen of shining red hair. Real red. As straight as any white man's. How ridiculous I was. Stupid enough to stand there, simply lost in admiration of how my hair now looked white, reflecting in the mirror in Shorty's room. I vowed that I'd never again be without a conk, and I never was for many years.
Oh.
Pain is beauty. Beauty is pain, and beauty was real white.
It hurts to be beautiful.
He went through all that to look like a white man.
Oh. That little last couple sentences is really sad.
Little baby Detroit red.
Oh. Malcolm X. That was so, so sweet.
Can't underscore enough that he would turn around and like dog women out repeatedly because he was feeling himself with his zoot suits.
So. Oh, was he? Oh, I actually didn't learn that part of dog women's suits.
That was his Detroit Ritter.
Oh, so he...
Before he went to prison.
Had a little dogging women out moment.
Yeah.
Well, that's unfortunate.
He definitely turned a woman out and turned her crazy.
Oh. Really? Man, I didn't know that part of him.
Yeah.
I wish you hadn't told me.
Well... It's in the book. What can I say? He said it first.
You know what?
It is an autobiography.
He did out him own his own self, so. Well, poor. That made me a little sad for Malcolm.
Yeah. Oh. Anyway, I forced you into that.
You did. That was actually a really painful journey for me.
Lengthy monologue. as an example of someone who's like, he's going to akin come back into the spotlight for fashion. But mm-hmm. at this point in the time, he's actually putting himself in danger mm-hmm. to meet the standard of white masculinity and fashion.
Yeah. Mm. That was really sad.
Yeah, it's also, don't
do that.
Don't. It's so bad for your scalp.
Oh my God. They were like, I'm going to protect our neck and forehead and ears, but like, burn the shit out of
us. If anybody handed me and Liz was like, go get me a can of lye and two potatoes, I'd be like, what the hell are we doing?
Can't do that. Although I have to say, as a white woman, I haven't had that many choices, so.
No, that's true.
Also, there's a white woman with hair that is approximately at its longest point, half an inch long.
So. There is a movie.
Oh. What's a movie?
It's called I Spit on Your Grave.
Oh, my God. Jessica.
It's a horror movie. It's the original was a tough watch. The remake, tough.
What? Because it's so horrifying.
I'm a maybe skip 25 seconds or so as a trigger warning if you don't want to hear the thing that I'm about to share.
Okay, this has to be real because we talked about how
we don't typically do
a trigger warning. So this was for what's the trigger warning about?
Okay,
it's about murder.
Yes, but first, sexual assault.
Okay,
but she gets her licks back. Is that's the whole point?
She gets
movie.
Her legs back.
Her licks back. Her,
okay,
her licks. Okay, her legs were fine.
I was like, what the fuck happened to her legs?
Anyway, the thing happens to her.
Okay.
And she disappears in the woods, and they're like, oh, she must be dead.
Oh.
She's not. She's setting up booby traps for all the people that did that to her.
Mm,
and one man, she dunks one man in lye.
Oh. Dangerous.
And watches him burn to death.
Mm. So, that's how serious lye is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, sometimes.
Yeah.
I have to do that.
It's a tough watch. Shut this jump, but the retribution is great.
You know, I do like a revenge story.
Mm-hmm. Especially, that's what this is.
Actually, I exclusively like a woman's revenge story, mm-hmm. but I don't like a horror story. So I'm really torn right now.
Yeah, it's
You know, I don't like a horror. So
that's what this is. Yes.
You let me borrow that one very mild book and set me into a tailspin.
What book?
Mexican Gothic.
Oh, which wasn't a horror book. Well, no, it was just fantasy,
it
actually.
It felt horrifying to me. So.
Okay. Actually, just a fantasy novel.
Well, I was horrified. So. Okay.
Well, and frightened. That's not justification for and a horror book.
And frightened.
The Gods of Jade and Shadow by the same author. Very good.
Oh, okay. Well, they probably won't.
It's much more,
I don't know.
Much more lore.
Hmm. Am I going to read it, though?
Yeah.
Do you think so?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Do you like Greek?
I do.
The Greek stories.
Yeah, like a goddess moment.
It's like that, but from Mexican culture.
Okay, yes, I'll do that.
All right, we've made it out of the Depression. Detroit Red has become, well, he's still Malcolm Little.
Oh, bless him.
But he's about to become Malcolm X and work under...
He's on a journey.
The
Why did he go to jail?
Crimes. Oh. Many crimes.
I didn't know if they were, like, crimes for justice or, like...
No, just, we're not
just
there yet.
Just crime.
Just the regular crimes. but he's about to become part of the Nation of Islam, and then he's going to be devastated because the great Elijah Muhammad is sleeping with his secretary, so that's going to, like, send him in, like, into a religious frenzy.
You know, we all had to go through a religious crisis.
And then he becomes, like, head X.
I mean, it's good. You know, it's
And then
good.
He goes on the Hajj, and then he becomes Malcolm X, and then, like, he really goes on his, like, don't fuck with me people journey, and I love that for him.
I like the, you know, he got there.
Mm-hmm.
He got there. And you know what? He treated some women badly, but he loved his wife.
Never cheated on Betty. Can't underscore that enough.
Mm-hmm. He did apparently treat some women badly. Yeah. Well.
I mean, no relationship is good in your 20s.
Many men have, though, to be honest.
You hooked up with a guy named Detroit Red. What were you going to get? You're not going to change him.
Some women. But also, you know, it's hard.
There is, like, a whole chapter in that book dedicated to that girl, though. So.
Maybe he felt bad. Yeah.
This was a reflection. Okay, we're in the 40s.
Okay.
The war is on. Shocking. Another war has arisen. It's in the world. Don't tell the South.
No. The South's like, what?
And there's some, like...
Okay. There's some, like...
Very specific icons are happening. Pinup girls. Having yes. Their eyes are out. They're on the war planes.
Mm-hmm. Little boobies. Little tit.
Rosie the Riveter. Mm-hmm. We love know her.
I dressed up as her for one Halloween.
I am going to share on the gram.
All white women have, though, so...
There is a... It's an easy costume. A little red lip and a bandana. You're nailing it.
Yeah, that's all. This is actually all I had. Yeah. And, you know I love a denim, mm-hmm. so... Had a chambray.
There's a photo in the Library of Congress I'm going to post on the gram mm-hmm. of Rosie the Riveter. But she is a black woman working uh-huh. on planes.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that one. Love her.
We'll share that one. We are coming out. So there's more patterns. Mm-hmm. Things are a lot more fitted. We're out mm-hmm. of the Gilded Age nonsense. Mm-hmm. And, like, the 20s have worn off.
Dressing for some function. Mm-hmm.
Style is a little bit less formal. We're having a linen is back.
Mm-hmm. Breezy. Mm-hmm.
There's a reason, though.
Oh. What?
Uh-huh.
Is it racism?
Yes.
Oh, fuck.
Specifically, again, that mammification of black women and minstrel shows. Oh, having okay. this, like, they have put people in a box. Mm. Birth of a Nation is also really putting black people at risk.
Mm, yeah.
There's a very good documentary called Birth of a Movement. Mm-hmm. It's like a graphic novel style.
Mm, yeah, I've heard of this.
About how some of the early protesting in Boston was because theaters wouldn't let black people in to see Birth of a Nation.
Mm. You want to describe what Birth of a Nation is?
Birth of a Nation, if you haven't heard.
Well, some people might not have.
I'm just... Good for them, honestly.
Your life's better for not knowing.
Honestly.
But now you're about to learn, so...
Sorry about it. It was a movie that idolized the Klan. We're just going to call it for what it is. It mm-hmm. was supposed to be like, the Klan came in and saved all the black people, but that's not actually the plot of the movie.
No.
A lot of people will argue that it's, like, the birth of modern film. Mm-hmm. Like, yep. film styles. I don't agree with that either.
And also, it told a terrible story, so even if it was. Uh-huh. Like, let's not. Let's not.
I guess when you're coming up from talkies, you know?
I mean, anyway, idolizes the Klan. Terrible movie.
Yep. This means that black people are having to navigate a body politic that other people are just not having to deal with. Mm-hmm. It becomes the idea of... respectability politics, because being forced to be well-dressed and, quote, well-mannered and, like, make an appearance and not taking up a lot of space is the difference for some people between living and dying in the streets.
Yep.
Because this is the peak of lynching in mm-hmm. the United States.
Where, like, literally just walking around.
Yes.
Is, like, a risk.
Yeah. Which is an ongoing issue before the 1940s. We've been doing this racism, mm-hmm. this specific type of racism for decades. They're just really good at it in the 40s.
Mm-hmm. That amps up some.
Yeah.
Or a lot.
Fashion in this era is like what we would consider like classic now. Mm-hmm. Simple prints, a lot of cottons, a lot of wools, kind of basic silhouettes. Not mm-hmm. quite a hoop skirt, mm-hmm. but hoop skirt adjacent.
Mm-hmm. Like some structure.
Kind of an A-line, but not really. Mm-hmm. We're tailoring our pants. We're sitting them at the waist. Mm-hmm. I follow a fashion guy.
A fashion guy?
On Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
That just dogs the hell out of men and their stupid fashion. And I really love him for that.
Oh.
But he's been teaching the world about where your natural waist is and why your pants should sit there.
I think I might follow or have seen that guy as well. Mm-hmm. He's doing the world service.
Very tall African man.
I think so. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I follow him or if I've just like creeped him.
He got me on this one video he did one time about, like, you have to stop going to brunch unless I don't want to see your ankles anymore with your cigarette pants and your loafers and not wearing any socks.
You know, I think you might have said that to me.
It's not that I'm calling out the Kappas directly. It's just that I am. So.
You say something petty and then you take a sip of your tea.
It's my own classic conditioning. The people, there are still, though, the Ivy League, though.
Mm.
And it's having an influence.
You know, they are forever.
And the Ivy League fashion and respectability politics are kabooming together, head to head now. Because, as I like to say, black people just do it better. Every time. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah, honestly, it's true.
So, either consciously or unconsciously, the black community is like, okay, you're forcing us into this respectability politic. We're going to take your style, and we're going to make you look foolish.
Yeah, because they're just do something so cool.
Just better at it. Just do something so and thus, we get Black Ivy.
Mm, okay, we have landed.
We have come to the point of the episode. After many minutes, thank you for following along.
We are at Black Ivy.
Yes. This is an important element to economic development and households in the black community because we're having, like I said, things are coming in cycles. And for those that could afford to go to college, they're getting jobs that require this very specific Black Ivy style. Or they're going to schools like Tuskegee.
Oh my God, Black Ivy, Ivy League.
She got it.
Okay, go ahead. I'm so sorry.
Please make that the intro. Thank you so much.
I'm so sorry. Okay. I understand. Okay.
So those in the black community that could afford to go to college, they're doing so to get jobs that require them to be like kind of buttoned up in an office. Mm-hmm. They're lawyers, they're doctors, dentists, whatever.
Yeah.
Or going to trade schools like Tuskegee, it's one of the most critical was tailoring.
Yeah.
So we're seeing again, just like enslaved people could hire themselves out to buy their freedom, they're using their skills in tailoring and as seamstresses to again open their own businesses because they don't have access to the same things.
Yeah. So it's like an economic development.
Yeah. Level. This is allowing more black shops to open that did repairs or cobbling or whatever else they need. Or selling clothing where they otherwise would not be allowed.
Okay.
Because there is that rule in the South that, like, you could go into a department store, but whatever you touched, you had to buy.
Yeah, exactly.
If you could go in at all. During the Civil Rights Movement, style becomes, like, the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because of these respectability politics.
Yeah.
If you're going to go disrupt the nation, look good while you're doing it.
Look sharp. Well, you're going to be breaking racist laws.
Yeah.
Look good.
But as we talked about headdresses being a way to identify hair.
Yeah.
Famous. Well, I mean, it's still like a really critical part of black women's identity. Whether it should be or not is not for me to decide.
No, not for us to discuss. Just that that's what
is what it is. A lot of organizing in the movement is done in barbershops and beauty salons.
Mm-hmm.
And Ann Moody recalls leaving the Jackson Woolworth sit-in immediately go to the beauty salon because she didn't want anyone to be able to mock or see her with food and drinks in her hair. Mm-hmm. And the shop served as a safe space.
So it was like a point of like dignity.
Yeah. Fannie Lou Hamer, even though people like tried to come for her.
How dare you?
For being poor and black and from Mississippi, like any of those things are up to her.
Oh.
Came dressed for success to come for the DNC.
Oh, I bet she fucking did.
Mm-hmm.
I bet she fucking
did. I think I've maybe seen one picture where that woman's hair is not done. Maybe one.
Maybe one.
And it's possible that one is just like, it was windy that day.
Could have originally been done.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, probably was. Yeah. So, Fannie Lou.
Fashion is actually like a movement within a movement because of practicality, but it changes over time. Especially with women, like we see them go from like heels to like a ked.
Mm-hmm, like a sneaker.
Yeah.
Like a sneak.
Like
a sharp pant.
I'm trying to think of the word that they...
I wonder what they would have said. I don't know.
I want to say pedal pusher, but that's not... That's pants.
Is it?
Yeah. Okay. Capris.
For bikes?
Mm-hmm.
Because you could ride a
bike. Push the pedals. The modern day Gibson girl can ride a bike.
I have no idea. Like, but they probably wouldn't call them Snickers.
No.
Hmm.
Hmm. Somebody tell us in the comments. Thank you so much.
Actually, this is where I'm relying on you. I'm not a real historian, so.
And men are using, like, a lot looser fabrics.
Yeah.
In rural areas, fashion was a movement.
Hmm.
Jeans. Jeans again.
Oh, we're back.
We're back.
To the jeans.
The denim is back. Back like it never left. You can see this, like, and I have many an example for the gram. We see this in pictures of then Stokely Carmichael, now Kwame Ture, Dorian Joyce Ladner, James Farmer. You always see them in overalls.
Oh. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Gotta have pockets.
Oh.
You're doing shit. You're in the streets.
Functional.
Yep.
I didn't think about that.
SNCC volunteers, as they come for Freedom Summer, can also be seen in the pedal pushers we just discussed.
Mm.
And tank tops. So you're seeing lots of lady arms.
Mm.
It's approximately 900 degrees in the south.
Well, I mean, practical.
Yeah.
Practical.
Mm-hmm. Jason Jules and Graham Marsh cover, like, a lot of the civil rights movement, fashion, and beyond in Black Ivy, a revolt in style.
Mm-hmm.
And they make a really interesting claim. That the Black Ivy style died with Martin Luther King.
Hmm. Did it? Do you think?
I don't think so.
Hmm.
Because even King, like, when you see him at, like, the James Meredith March, he's in, like, a linen, like...
You'll see him wearing, like, regulars.
And, like, a boater hat. And, like, he's a very, like... Not really a suit guy so much when he's out in the streets. Kind of like a Yankees guy.
I mean, you'll see him wearing, like, suit stuff when he's doing, like, the big... Mm-hmm. You know, the big stuff. But, like, there's a lot of pictures of him just...
Out there.
Just dressed. Mm-hmm. Just clothes. Like, just chilling in the, you know, chilling in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Planning stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This is also the era, I think. This is an accessories era.
Hmm.
The sunglasses, slap. The handbags, slap.
Yeah. Dress it up. Mm-hmm. Wear your basics, dress it up.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's my vibe.
Mm-hmm. But we see this too, like, it's interesting that they center King on this because, like, Malcolm X exists. But he's got that, like, everybody knows him because of those very thick-framed glasses.
Mm-hmm.
And he's always in, like, a very long coat and a very skinny tie.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you know.
He has, like, there's, like, a uniform.
Yeah. And then we also have James Baldwin, who is a fashion icon, whether he wants to be one or not.
Oh, my God.
Yes. The man could dress.
He's so cool.
I know. It's, like, kind of annoying, actually.
I kind of hate him for it. Like, mm-hmm. And he's, like, he's so smart. He writes so well. He's so fucking cool. Like, come on, James.
Septima Clark is an example of that, too. Like, no. Sunglasses game, 10 out of 10. Dresses, slap.
Mm. Mm.
Coretta, forget about it.
Yeah, actually, yes. Fashion. Yeah. Fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Fashion. F-A-C-I-O-N. Fashion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I, like, agree and disagree. Like, Malcolm X is assassinated several years before MLK, but, like... Like, we got the Kennedys for a while. Mm-hmm. They're pretty relaxed, but Chappaquiddick.
Yeah. I mean, who knows?
Like, you know...
I don't think a fashion thing can entirely die with one person.
No, and I don't know that was the point of the assassination. I think we're giving a lot of credit.
Of all the things assassination could have been about, I think fashion would be...
I don't think the shooter was like, no more linens.
I do think that would be maybe the last thing on the list.
Yeah. What he did not get to see in his lifetime, though, was the very quick emergence of the Black Power movement.
Mm, yeah.
Picture it. Lowndes County, Alabama, 1965. The Lowndes County Freedom Organization is founded, giving us the absolutely stolen idea... Huey P. Newton for the Black Panther Party.
Mm.
Who, as we know, very iconic in their leather jackets and their afros.
They are actually very cool.
Yeah, it's actually, again, like, kind of annoying.
It's like, James, like, why do I have to be this way?
Like, yeah.
Like, come on.
But that becomes, like, its own, like, this is a reclamation of power and space in the black body.
It becomes its own identity.
Yeah.
It's pretty recognizable immediately. So.
Yeah. And we're in the 70s. It's the soul era. We're back at big lapels and bell-bottom pants, which were, like, not that far off from 1940s fashion.
No. Is Skull coming back?
Yep. First, it's, like, some soul era is, like, kind of loose, a lot more layering, a lot more accessories.
Mm-hmm.
bolder, mm-hmm. louder patterns.
Very bright.
Paired with this kind of dichotomy of the Black Panther Party.
Mm-hmm.
All that to say, everything does come in a cycle. And we're going to see some, like, really interesting, bizarre fashion choices in the 80s and 90s because of hip-hop that I wouldn't make.
No. But I'm, you know, a different human. So.
Correct. But, like, all good things are coming back around. This, mm-hmm. I think the Black Ivy fashion is definitely having another moment, mm-hmm. particularly in hair.
Yes.
Seeing a lot of Black Ivy haircuts. Mm. A lot of knits, very popular, and out with the men.
Mm. I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
Very comfy, very cozy. Yeah. Very.
I feel like we're the like ladies. A flare. The ladies are finding like a love for lighter fabrics again that I really mm-hmm. like for us.
Yeah, we need some.
Yeah. Maybe not in color, but in type.
Just toasty. So
yeah,
practical.
Mm-hmm. Mm. We're finding interesting outerwear. Mm. I think that was very popular in the '50s. I have like a booming jacket.
Mm-hmm. Like a cool,
a good
outerwear. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's coming back right now. Like a coat is in.
I watch a lot of Housewives.
Oh,
the Real Housewives.
You do.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed across all the franchises, gloves, very popular.
Oh, interesting.
Like a fancy glove.
Like a fancy glove?
Where you like put your engagement ring over the glove.
Oh my God.
And then like a lace glove.
Okay.
Situation.
You know, I was thinking of I was going too far in the practical direction, and I was going to say that it's too hot in the South for gloves most of the time.
Correct. Some of these ladies, though, do live in New Jersey.
Not the type of glove that we are talking about.
No. This is not a glove for function.
Well, only I am not fashion, as they say. In fact, my nearly eight-year-old, often reminds me that I am not fashion.
That's okay.
So,
but if you ever need inspo, you have Black Ivy to fall back on.
I have Black Ivy.
Because I have taken you through approximately 100 years of fashion history, which we are stopping in the 1970s. And this has been your lookbook of Black Ivy.
The verbal lookbook has happened today.
Yeah.
Black Ivy League, shall we say. I've been fascinated by this. I think this is going to be like a highly visual. I think the Instagram grid is going to be important this week.
Yeah.
For the visuals to go along with it. But this has been fascinating.
Yeah. Follow it, like it, love it. Give us 5 stars on your favorite platform. If not, 5 years of bad luck and a cowlick. Okay, love you, bye.